Have you started? Yes, you've started.
So, I had a whole talk planned out, and then somebody asked me, I put in a request that I give a talk on procrastination, which I tried to put off doing. No. Procrastination. So before I get into the heart of what it is and how to work with it, I have to remind make you familiar with a couple of very core Buddhist concepts that I'll be using to discuss how procrastination works and how we can get a handle on it. The first core Buddhist concept is the idea of mindfulness, what the Buddha called sati, or mindfulness. And what mindfulness means is that the Buddha said we have this tendency to be overly externally focused in our lives. We tend to fixate on everything that's going on around us, what people are doing. And we generally don't tend to have very much awareness of what's going on inside of us. So if we're angry with someone, we repeat the story of the things that they did that we're unhappy with. But maybe the most we'll be aware of is that we're just shaking with rage, or that we feel hot. But that's pretty much sometimes just the limit of the internal awareness. We have no idea how anger has affected our breathing, what part of the body is the most tight, what parts of the body are in fact released and softened when we're angry. We just don't have a lot of internal awareness often. If we're frightened, we might be aware of the thing that we're frightened of out there, the event or the person or whatever. But very often we have no idea of exactly how fear is registering in the body, the breath, the mind, other than these thoughts about how bad the outcome might be. Sometimes the mind is very expansive, sometimes the mind is very contracted and claustrophobic. Sometimes there's a lot of thoughts flowing through, sometimes there's just one repeating itself over and over again. So mindfulness is about, instead of thinking of every experience in our lives in terms of what's going on around us, it's about bringing the focus inwards and seeing how each experience is also manifested internally by different sensations. And when we do this, immediately we begin to notice a couple of things. The first is that mental states that we thought were just solid, unchanging, that we were stuck in fact, are constantly changing. They're comprised of different components that are constantly shifting. For example, I might think that I'm in frustration, or I might think that I'm very sad, or whatever. And so long as my mind is externally biased with what's going on around me, I'll feel very powerless and I'll feel like I'm stuck. But the moment I bring my awareness inwards and really see what's going on, I'll notice that sadness has a certain body tone, it has a certain breath to it, it has a certain feeling of sluggishness, the mind feels heavy. There's all these components that make up sadness, and each time we're in it, it's different. And while we're in it, it's changing. And just this wisdom that, oh, what I'm feeling sad today, or what I'm feeling angry today, it might, the thing I'm feeling sad about, or the person I'm feeling angry with, that might not change, but the internal sensations are changing. Moreover, I have some control over what's going on in my body. I have no control over what other people do. So if somebody's infuriating me, if somebody's irritating me or making me feel, or not making, is creating situations where I feel unhappy with, I have no control over them, but I do have control over the ability to influence the way my body feels at any given moment. It's a way in to change whatever I'm experiencing. So that's what's called mindfulness, internal focus, and that's going to be one of the keys to working with frustration. The other key is karma, which the Buddha said that the mental experience we're having right now is not only partially caused by what's happening out there, but is largely caused by what we've been doing ourselves. For example, a habitual gambler might go to the poker table and might lose his rent check in a game of poker. Now, if he blames the game of poker, certainly that's part of it, but if he's unwilling to look at his addiction and the fact that he's going around gambling all the time, he's only looking at part of the story. If I go into the subway with an expectation that everybody has to fall in line with my particular ideas of the way people should behave, I'm going to be constantly upset by people. Now, for instance, I might get into the subway and some kid might not stand up for a pregnant woman or for an older person or whatever. But they're not familiar with my morals or my ideas. And the more I rigidly hold on to these ideas and these sense of what's right and what's wrong, the more I'm going to be upset. So I'm bringing something in. If I instead let go of that rigidity, then there'll be less suffering in my life. If I let go of my addictions, there'll be less suffering. When people are desperate, for example, to get into a relationship, because they think that's what's going to end their loneliness, so they look for an external solution. They pick up the first girl or guy that passes by, and after the sex and the first couple of weeks of wonderfulness, then they realize, oh my God, this person's a schnook. Then the only thing they notice is the schnookiness of the person. They don't notice I was desperate. I was not seeing all the red flares that were going up the moment I met this person. I'm driven into finding somebody, and I'm just picking somebody, but I'm just seeing the fault in them. I'm not seeing the shit I'm bringing to the table. And of course, again, we have control over our role in all these events. We may not be able to control the world, the people who don't stand up for old people or the people we're in relationships with or the people we work with, but we can change our expectations and our cravings and the things, and the ideas that we carry into each moment. This is our role in causing often our suffering. Also, if we're just in a mind that's constantly stressed out, when we sit down and meditate and there's no reason to be upset, we're in a wonderful room and everybody around us is peaceful, and then we settle down and then the body is filled with energy and the mind is ping-ponging around, and we can be like, what the fuck is going on? I'm not doing anything right now. I'm not at work. I'm here. I got a nice cushion. Sitting next to some attractive people. And my mind is just flipping out. Well, that's karma. That's the fact that we've been racing through life, racing around, and suddenly we reach a place where we want to stop, and the mind doesn't stop. Finally, the Buddha said that also playing forward, everything we do now has two kinds of results. It has the immediate result right here, and it has the long-term result. The immediate result is very transparent to us. If I smoke crack, I'm pretty much aware that I'll feel pretty good in the short term. I don't know, I probably wouldn't, but whatever. If I shot dope or whatever, it would feel good in the short term, but in the long term it would have devastating repercussions not only on my life, my health, but my mind would feel a sense of shame and a sense of having given up long-term sobriety and having, you know, done something that's not a spiritual solution, not finding a lasting solution to whatever was causing me the stress in the first place. So, on the other hand, sometimes things that feel kind of shitty and difficult in the short term, in the long term make us feel really peaceful. Making an amends with somebody that we've injured. In the short term, when we apologize, it feels kind of shitty. It's nobody's favorite thing to call up somebody and say, hey, I did like a shithead or whatever. I was, you know, stressed out. I don't really feel happy with what I've done. I want to own up to it. But in the long term, the amount of relief we have that we no longer have to carry that sense of guilt around with us, and guilt is something that we carry around with us all the time. It doesn't go away. The Buddha's core to one of the Buddha's concepts of karma is that when we do something that's shameful and causes guilt, it makes the mind a much less pleasant place for us to reside in. So when we let go, when we make up for these things, even though it doesn't feel pleasant in the short term, in the long term, the benefits are numerous. In fact, they far outweigh the short-term stress. But unfortunately, the human mind tends to go for what feels terrific in the short term. Doesn't matter what the long-term consequences. Why? Well, we're set up to survive in the short term, not to worry about the long term. It's just the way that we were programmed from years, millions of years of evolution. Frankly, the average lifespan when the brain was settled was something like 21, so all of us would be pretty much dead. We've all outlived our our planned lifespan, or the predictable one. The world was such a dangerous place. Basically, the brain is just set up just to survive for another day. So we have that kind of thinking. What will make me feel good right now? Damn the long-term consequences. Unfortunately, we tend to live a lot longer, and we have to live in the long-term results of our actions. So, just like all these states, procrastination has its internal components. It has its causes, and it has its ways that we can release it. Generally, the cause of procrastination, I'm going to use, for example, making an amends with somebody we don't want to, writing a paper in school. Any others? Something?
Applying to grad school.
Applying to grad school. That's a good one. So, filling out paperwork. What?
Revising an article.
So, doing some writing, you know, filling out forms. Learning how to program of these, something. Whatever they call it these days. I'm going to say a VCR. I'm like 150 years old now. Technology is like, everything like was, you know, that's 3 years ago was in now makes you sound like ancient. Anyway, so we procrastinate. And the reason is that at the core, the first time sometime earlier in our life when we've done this thing, we've tried to rewrite something, we've tried to fill out forms, we've applied for something, we found it to be stressful and difficult. And so a part of the brain called the amygdala records the stress, records the body tension that we experienced then, and then every time afterwards we do it, if we're not mindful, we're going to reduplicate when we go to fill out the form or write the paper or anything that we've been avoiding. The next time we try to take on that chore, the stress will rise, the exact same physical tightness. Because the amygdala, that part of the brain, records very accurately exactly what tension shape your body was in during the initial experience, and it reduplicates it when we're doing it again. Somebody's in a car crash, and the car crash just happens to be on Houston. The next time they approach Houston, their amygdala will see the sign, and their body will start assuming the position of about to be in a crash. All those muscles will start to tense. So when we go back to the activity that we've been avoiding, the body gets stressed and the mind realizes it. It realizes that there's all this underlying tension. There's a part of the brain called the insula that reads it and reports, oh shit, I'm about to do something that I don't feel good about. Something that I've associated with difficulty. So what happens next is the brain floods us with two kinds of thoughts. A, this is going to really suck. I hate doing this. This is going to be painful. And B, distractions that would feel much better in the short term. Like, I really do have to watch that Battlestar Galactica episode. Graduate school can sit back. Battlestar is going to win out. Because I'm stressed, I'm breathing shallow, my mind is contracting around all the thoughts of how difficult this is going to be, and I'm not going to do it right, and I'm going into these stories of how painful it will be. And meanwhile, there's Battlestar Galactica just hanging out there, seeming so shiny and easy and free of stress and wonderful. Or maybe it's whatever form your distractions take shape in. So this entire set of experiences creates an underlying state that's very filled with stress. The next thing to note then is because it's filled with stress, we tend to choose the thing that feels good in the short term, the distraction, rather than going through the thing that will make us feel better about ourselves in the long term, but will require going through stress right now. The mind again chooses the thing that feels easy in the short term. Because it's unaware or it hasn't acquainted itself with the truth that if we do put in the time, that we will feel better in the long run. Now, one of the causes of procrastination that's also very addressable is that we tend to reward ourselves not for the effort we put into our endeavors. Instead, we tend to only reward ourselves when we complete something and when we feel it looks good in comparison with everybody else's work. In other words, we're very externally biased in how we reward ourselves. If we take 2 hours to try to write something and nothing comes of it, we don't feel good about ourselves. We tend to withhold a sense of feeling good about what we've done, only doling out a sense of satisfaction and acknowledgement to ourselves when we've completed a task to arbitrary standards. So if I have to rewrite a paper or fill out a form, I'll only reward myself, not if I tried for a while. I'll only reward myself if that form is completed and I've written a great essay or I've rewritten that paper or I've done this assignment or I've called up the dentist or I've made that amends and the amends went well. So I'm making the sense of rewarding for myself completely contingent upon the results externally rather than all the efforts that I put into it. Now, this is very important. There was a very wonderful clinical study where they broke down grade school kids into two groups. The first group was kids whose parents rewarded them for their grades. The second group was kids whose parents rewarded them for their efforts. And if you can't guess the results, they found that the ones who were rewarded for their efforts went a lot further in school, were much happier, much better socialized, and tended to be much more creative thinkers. The children who were rewarded for their grades, for how well they did in the end result in comparison to others, wound up, in fact, dropping out on average a lot earlier, were far less creative thinkers, were far less happy socializing with other students, and were generally more combative with their teachers because they simply saw the entire endeavor of learning as a way to get a grade, to get rewarded by their parents. So we tend to internalize this poor tendency of only rewarding ourselves based on, or only feeling good for efforts based not on the effort, but simply on what's the end result of our work. This sets us up for even more stress and even more procrastination. Finally, the last piece in the puzzle is that every time we put off or avoid doing something that we know would make us feel better or make us feel more a greater sense of ease in the long term, or put off something that we know would be good for our health or good for our relationships with others. Every time we put something off, it doesn't go away. Avoidance doesn't make the chore go away. There's a little part of the brain, in Jewish terms it's known as the internal nagger, that nagging voice that lets you know that you're avoiding something. Sometimes it's just a feeling in the back of the neck. Sometimes it's a little voice that says, you didn't do that. Sometimes it's a poking feeling or hollowness in the chest. But there's always a part of our experience aware that we're avoiding something. Not doing things doesn't make them go away. It just adds more stress. And the more stress we add to it, the more we procrastinate. So this brings us to solutions. The first, working with procrastination. The first, as in all mindfulness practice, is to put aside the stories that the mind will tell us about how bad this is going to be or how painful. Bring the awareness within and see what comprises the state of avoidance. When I'm trying to do something or I'm avoiding it, when I think about doing something and that feeling comes up of, oh, I just can't. What comprises that state? What is inside the breath? What parts of the body get tense? Without any judgment, just bring your awareness inwards and see what's there. While you keep the notion of, okay, I'm opening myself to this idea, see if you can breathe and relax the parts of the body that are comprising your resistance. See if you can find, in my case, when I'm avoiding something, there's very often a choking here in the throat, there's very often a tensing in my brow. And if I breathe and I relax that, and I release the tightness here by breathing through it, I can be more at ease and can help myself begin the first steps into doing something. Another is that we're going to reward ourselves for however little effort we put into something. It's a long-term project, but if we're putting off something, it's much better to put 10 minutes into it and then feel good about the 10 minutes than to simply put no time into it and then beat ourselves up over the fact we didn't put anything into it. Why is that? Because the beating yourself up over not doing something, over avoiding something, just creates more stress. And I think we've already determined that procrastination is filled with stress enough already. So the way to work with it is to cultivate a voice that's very much focusing on the carrot rather than the stick. Even if you put 10 minutes or 15 minutes into writing a paper, the more you associate that endeavor with being rewarded and not associate the endeavor of writing or filling out a form with being critical of yourself, being frustrated, beating yourself up, that change of association will then relax, further relax the body, and will slowly begin to rewire the amygdala so that it doesn't fill the mind and the body with so much stress each time we approach doing whatever chore we avoid. Next, it's also very, very important throughout life to take time and appreciate every act of virtue that was difficult for us but made us feel good in the long term. That practice of refocusing the mind away from short-term results and noticing what the long-term results of our actions will then create much more insight when we are avoiding things. We'll realize, hey, wait a second, there's not just how I feel right now in play. There's also going to be a long-term result to this that I'm going to have to live in. And I deserve to be happy. And because I want to be happy, because I'm going to reward myself, and because I'm going to make the body as comfortable as I can when I undertake this chore, I'm going to right now reflect and feel good about each time I do something that was difficult but made me feel better about myself in the long term. See if there's anything else. It's the loudest cough. I had to check if I was shot. finally. The Buddha talked about learning how to pause when we're about to do something that we have a suspicion is not virtuous or not is unbeneficial to others, when we feel the motivation is to cause harm. But on the corollary, there's also times he talked about when we know something is helpful, when we know something is harmless, when we know something is in fact beneficial, it's sometimes a lot better to learn to jump in when the idea comes up and not wait for the voices to come in and push you along. Because when it comes to a chore, those voices will never show up. The cavalry will never arrive. In fact, when it's something, very often when we have an idea, oh, I should call up that person I haven't spoken to because it's awkward the last time, or I should put a little effort into this paper. If we wait for the, yeah, that's a great idea, it's not going to happen. In fact, what you're going to have is that, no, that's going to suck. I don't want to do that. What are you, fucking crazy? The inner rationalizing voice, which is really has nothing to do with rationality, it's just the inner self-serving, sycophantish voice that wants us to do anything but the thing that's difficult and challenging and outside of our comfort zone, will immediately pop up. So it's good when you, throughout life, when you an impulse comes up to do something that you know is healthy. For example, you might have an impulse during the day to stop and breathe and relax for a second. Rather than override that impulse with, no, I've got too much to do, follow it. Follow your good impulses and learn not to wait for the secondary, I second that emotion, whatever voice in your head, because it's not going to happen. I've noticed that the most unskillful voices in my mind come with just armies behind them. But the voice that says, maybe you could help out, you know, snake the sink, which is, you know, clogging up. That voice, you know, it has no friends, that voice. It's a little voice in there that says, oh, maybe you might want to do something worthwhile in this completely empty hour with which you're surfing the web or whatever. So once again, the core of it is that if we learn to notice that the causes and conditions, the long-term results, and start to bring our awareness in, relaxing the body, rewarding ourselves for efforts so that we're reassociating each chore not with beating up on ourselves and judging ourselves, but with, oh, if I do this, I'm going to reward myself. How do you reward yourself? It can just be feeling really good, getting in touch with that feeling. It could be doing something that you like doing. It could be right after I do this thing, for any effort I put into it, then I'm going to go outside and ride my bike and buy a bagel. I don't know what the fuck you're going to do. I don't really care. It's just reward yourself. instead of beating up on yourself for not doing something, reward yourself just for the effort. The more you put incremental effort into it and see that it's safe, that you won't allow all the beating up voices to come in, that you're instead going to make this associated with a sense of approval and building up esteem, the more these chores will be transformed from something that we avoid to something that is maybe not looked forward to, but something at least will be open towards. I thank you for listening. Hope you got something from it. And now it's your turn to ask any questions about anything in the spiritual path.